She turned to Darai and Zahn with a grin as solid as steel. My soldiers, it's time to darken the stars.
Chapter 41 Androma.
Can you turn that cursed siren off? Andy yelled over the ear-splitting noise, running to her captain's seat on the bridge. Lyra was already punching in the override code, blue hands a blur. The alarm turned off, leaving the room eerily silent as Lyra righted the ship. Andy's stomach swayed as the Marauder leveled out. "What the hell's going on?" Andy asked finally, breaking the silence. She activated her comm and signaled to Breck, requesting permission to view her gunner's feed. She granted the request, and Andy blinked, suddenly seeing through Breck's eyes. Breck was down below in the med bay. Her large hands and Alfie's metallic ones were frantically working to strap Valin's again unconscious form to a table. Gilly and Dex slipped in and out of view as they tried to help.
"Memory?" Andy barked. "Run a shipwide diagnostic now!"
Silence for a few moments, and then Memory's mechanical voice filled the bridge.
"According to assessment, the engine is in meltdown. Please proceed to the nearest landing bay and prepare for engine failure."
"Meltdown?" Andy barked. "How in the hell is that even possible? We just got her repaired a few days ago."
Lyra popped a wad of chew into her mouth. The scales on her arms began to light up.
"It's possible the fools who repaired her missed something. She's overheating."
Lyra pressed a few more buttons, yanked on a lever, and tapped on the screen again.
"If we can cool her down, we should be able to make a safe landing. But according to the numbers, with the velocity we're going at right now, plus our weight, the situation seems rather dire."
"Breck," Andy spoke into the ship's main comm system, "get down to the engine room and see if you can cool it down."
Breck's voice echoed back in Andy's ear.
"On it!"
Andy's stomach swayed again, and Lyra gobbled up another wad of chew. When the chew came out, it meant the situation needed her full attention. Moments later, Breck's voice came back, nearly hysterical.
"Oh, God stars, Andy! The cooling system is totally blasted! I knew I should have demanded to oversee the repairs!"
Andy blinked, slipping into Breck's open feed, viewing the scene through her eyes. Smoke billowed through the open hatch. Breck's hand waved in front of her face, trying to clear a path through the haze. She pointed, leveling her gaze onto the cooling system. All the wires were melted, along with the outer shell.
"It's bad, Andy," Breck said. "Like, kill us all bad."
Andy blinked again, pulling herself out of Breck's view and back into her own. She cast a glance sideways at Lyra and could tell from her stricken expression that she'd seen Breck's feet as well.
"How in the hell could that even happen?" Andy asked. "Fool mechanics who don't know how to work on a classic," Breck growled.
Lyra hissed out a breath. "We have to make an emergency landing. If we leave hyperspace now, the closest system to us is..." She cursed.
"Stunna."
"Which means we'll have to land on Adhira," Andy said. Lyra nodded, her scales flashing. Her past on Adhira, her home planet, was something Lyra did not speak of often. But Andy knew, especially judging by her pilot's rapidly heating scales and the way her fingers gripped the throttle tighter than ever before, that going back home was something Lyra definitely didn't want to do. She'd avoided jobs there for years. But if Lyra was openly suggesting they land on Adhira, then the Marauder really must be beyond helping right now. "Are you sure about this?" Andy asked, pulling her long hair into a braid. Lyra's skin began to smoke, but her voice was calm and even. "I can tap into my connections there. We will have help."
"Good help?" Andy asked.
"Or bad help?" Lyra bit her lip.
"I am undecided at present. The Queen and I have a bit of a muddled past."
Andy groaned.
"I guess we'll find out soon, then."
She reached up and tapped her comm.
"Ladies!"
Dex's voice echoed back into her ear.
"And handsome gentlemen?"
The ship rattled, a reminder of how little time they had. She'd kill those pathetic mechanics for this. Andy grimaced.
"We're making an emergency landing on Adhira."
Gilly's voice chipped into the comm.
"But Lyra doesn't want to go there."
"This is my order, Gilly," Andy commanded. "Get to the bridge now. Alfie, calm the general. Tell him to let the Queen know we'll need a quick repair if we're going to finish this Stars Forsaken mission."
"Already on it,"
Dex said. After all they'd gone through to get Valin, things just had to go wrong now. The life of a space pirate, Andy thought to herself. She tightened her harness, then sat back and watched as they exited hyperspace in a wounded ship, soaring straight for Atara, the planet full of color and life. Beside her, Lyra looked like she would rather die. Chapter 42 Androma. The sight of Atara spreading before her should have taken Andy's breath away. Instead, she was just hoping she would still be breathing once they landed. The crew's fate was in Lyra's hands, and Andy could only hope her pilot could keep them from exploding into bits of metal and flesh. As they neared the planet, Lyra sent a message to the landing dock she'd managed to secure moments ago in the capital of Rymor. This would be their first time landing on Atara as a crew, and Andy didn't think it would bode well for any future visits they might make to the planet if they crashed. Especially for Lyra, whose scales had already begun to glow to the point of smoking. "Those complete airheads," Lyra mumbled as she turned off the comm. "They think we have enough power to make it to the landing base, but at this point the engines are so bad I'm surprised we haven't lost the oxygen pump yet." "Don't listen to them. Land where you can and they will come to us," Andy said, trying to calm her second. This was the first time Andy had ever seen Lyra so close to losing complete control of her emotions, and she knew that it was the impending return to her home planet that was unnerving her so. As they entered the atmosphere of Atara, the ship gave a lurch. Andy definitely did not like the screeching groan the ship made, or the fact that they weren't slowing down as they should. This definitely wasn't a normal atmospheric entry. "Come on, baby," Andy said, patting the Marauder's dash as if it would actually listen to her plea. "Coming," an unwelcome voice came from behind her. Andy let out an audible groan. "Get in a seat, Dextro, now!" "I'm trying to lighten the mood, Androma. We all know Lyra is fully capable of handling this situation." "Thanks," Lyra muttered as Dex plopped into one of the chairs behind her, legs sprawled out in front of him like he was about to watch a film. Breck and Gilly rushed in after him, strapping into seats as well. "Where's Alfie?" Andy asked. "Down making sure Valin doesn't fall off the table," Gilly said. "Which wouldn't matter anyway, since he said there is a 93% chance of immediate death or dismemberment upon impact." "Damned artificial life forms," Breck growled. Andy turned back around, eyes wide as she took in the oncoming view. Below, the endless sea appeared, the single ocean on Atara that made way for the large central landmass, which was scattered with veiny rivers, monstrous trees, red deserts, and the central Rymor Mountain. Lyra's hands were steady on the controls as she eased the ship the best she could toward the quickly approaching ground. Andy watched as her pilot maneuvered around the massive trees that dotted Atira's landscape. They were so tall that they peaked above the clouds, and some even towered higher than the mountain. Dex hooted from behind her, as if this was a joyride instead of a highly dangerous emergency landing that could kill them all. God stars, he was a fool. Blocking Dex out, Andy gripped the armrests of her chair and looked out the viewport again, which was now full of trees and utterly devoid of any glimpse of the sky. "This had better not scratch my ship," she yelled, thinking of its already damaged hull. "Scratch?" Gilly yelped. "I think we're in for more than that, Cap." "You want the good news or the bad news first?" Lyra asked Andy, teeth gritted, eyes wild as she wove around the worst obstacles in their path. "The good news," Andy said, hoping it outweighed the bad. "The good news is that the trees should lessen the impact, and when we come out of the forest, we should be only a few meters from ground level. There is a field up ahead, according to the radar, and at this angle I'll be able to manipulate a semi-controlled landing." Andy was momentarily relieved, but tensed again at the ominous expression on Lyra's face. "And the bad news?" she asked. Her pilot grimaced. "We'll be landing in one of the clearings that has a major village surrounding it. Even with the trees slowing us down, we're still gaining too much velocity, meaning we'll likely plow right into the village." Her voice caught in her throat, as if she were holding back equal parts terror and nausea. Her hands flew over the controls. "The field isn't large enough to land in without potential casualties." Andy's head spun, racing for any idea to grab a hold of. "If the ship was lighter, would we be able to stop in time?" There was a pause before Lyra responded. Andy could almost see her making the calculations in her head. "Yes, but we'd need to lose at least 1 ton if we want to make a dent in the velocity."
A sudden lurch threw Andy forward against her harness as they hit a wicked bout of turbulence. By the time she looked back up, rubbed the back of her now tender neck, her view was no longer of the catastrophe happening outside, but of a rear end. Dex's rear end.
"Do you have a death wish, Erez?" Andy yelled, trying to reach the band of his cargo pants to pull him back. "No, I'm not hell-bent on destruction like you are, Rosella. If you would pull your head out of whatever dark hole you have it in, you would notice that I'm helping you."
Before Andy could stop him, he'd slammed his palm against a big red button and a whooshing sound echoed throughout the ship.
"Did he just hit the red button?" Gilly screamed.
"You're welcome, ladies," Dex said. "You can thank me later. I just released the escape pods and lessened our load enough for us to stop before we completely annihilate that village with my ship."
"My ship!" Andy barked at him.
"Would the two of you just stop fighting?" Breck howled.
Lyra cursed as the harness strapped across her chest began to melt away beneath the heat of her scales. Already the suit she wore was turning to cinders. If she didn't regain control of her emotions, Andy knew she'd lose consciousness. "Lyra," Andy tried to sound calm, "you have to breathe. You have to keep yourself present." Her pilot's brow wrinkled, scales flashing ever brighter.
"I will breathe when I see us safely on the ground, Androma."
An enormous tree loomed in front of them, and the ship screamed as Lyra tilted them sideways to avoid it. Dex toppled into Andy's lap.
"Lyra!" Andy yelled, shoving Dex away. "Steady us!"
But the ship was careening even farther, tilting so far to the left that Andy felt as if she'd been turned onto her head. With horror, she looked back at Lyra, just in time to see her pilot slump forward in her seat, her head lolling against her chest, her scales so bright it was like staring into a purple sun.
"She's out!" Andy yelled.
And they were out of time. Every muscle in her body clenched as she saw the rapidly approaching field and village in the distance. Memory's voice spoke, loud and clear, through it all.
"Prepare for impact in 3, 2, 1.
Chapter 43. Dex. Dex detested the weightless stomach-dropping sensation of falling from the skies. There was no control, no stopping it. The feeling of impact, though, he hated even more. He had just 1 second to enable the ship's metal outer shields before they hit the ground. As they crashed into the planet, it felt like the Marauder was a giant bullet gouging through hard, solid rock. Dex's skull rattled as he was knocked off his feet and back into his seat. His bones felt like they were going to snap beneath his skin as he clung to the armrests of his chair, trying to avoid being flung into the air. The wounds he'd sustained on Lunamere screamed in protest. There was a horrible, jarring jerk as the ship bounced once, twice. Oh, hell, Dex thought. The ship soared across the adherent landscape as if it had sprouted claws and was tearing apart the ground.
"Emergency."
Memory's cool voice spoke, barely audible over the screeching and rumbling as the ship mercifully slowed its forward movement.
"Emergency."
Her voice flickered out, and the entire system went dark as a last final screech and groan exploded from beneath them. Another lurch, like the ship was teetering on the edge of a cliff, followed by the sound of something cracking. Then it all stopped, as quickly as it had begun. Silence, pure and simple, so sudden that Dex wondered if maybe he was dead. He groaned and tried to stand, but his legs wouldn't hold him. His teeth were still vibrating, and his head, holy hell of all hells, felt like it was going to explode.
"Not exactly my idea of fun," Dex said, stifling another groan.
No one answered. Maybe he'd survived, and they were all dead. Then, somewhere in front of him, a whimper, a rustle, the pop of a harness coming loose. Andy's disembodied voice came from the captain's chair. Dex's heart leaped at the sound.
"Is everyone okay?"
Gilly and Breck answered in a soft chorus as the Marauder settled to stillness around them.
"Help me with Lyra,"
Andy commanded. The pilot was still hunched over in her harness, the scales on her skin finally dimmed but still smoking, as if she'd been aflame moments before. A horrible pop sounded, and then a flash of light blinded them as part of the Marauder's metal shielding actually fell away from the viewport like a piece of flaking skin. Dex stared through the new opening. They'd stopped a mere wing's length from a row of stone houses. People flocked outside, all of them wide-eyed, most of them looking furious as hell. Adhera, like most capital planets, had a melting pot of citizens. But despite their dizzying array of appearances, the villagers all had the same look of hatred plastered on their faces as they glowered at the Marauder. Dex was a little impressed. Anger and hatred were incredibly rare emotions on this peaceful planet. He loosed a sharp exhalation as the ground trembled beneath the ship. In the distance, beyond the row of homes, the edge of the rainforest loomed. Already he could see the cause of the shaking earth. A set of two monstrous black-tusked creatures emerged from the tree line. They were ugly as sin, with scaled, rough hides and curling tusks that stretched up toward the rainforest canopy. The beasts pulled a two-story wagon double the size of the Marauder behind them. Its wooden wheels were as tall as most of the village homes, and painted on their axles was a golden spiral with a horizontal line jutting through the middle, the symbol of Adhera. Sentinels, the Queen's personal private guard. The waiting crowd split like a river to allow the wagon to pass through as it headed straight for the wreckage. Dex took it upon himself to break the silence.
"I hate to break it to you, loves," he said, finally managing to stand up from his chair on unsteady legs.
"Then don't," Andy told him as she and the girls gently unstrapped the unconscious, still-steaming pilot.
"Please don't."
Dex spoke up anyway.
"We are so dead."
Andy sighed as she looked out at the oncoming wagon.
"For once, Dextro, you have no idea how right you are."
Chapter 44 Androma. The last time Andy saw her home planet, she'd been a 14-year-old girl with tears in her eyes and her best friend's blood on her hands. By sheer mercy, she'd been able to escape her death sentence. After that, she'd made her way out into the galaxy and traveled through worlds she'd never known, unsure of who she was, where she was going, or who she would have to become to survive. The only thing certain was the whisper of death, a monster made of fear and fury that followed her no matter how far she tried to go. Many nights, Andy stayed awake, looking over her shoulder, terrified that General Cortaz would send men from her planet to come and lock her away. They'd never found her. Instead, she'd found a bounty hunter with a lust for life and a bag full of crabs, and he'd helped her rediscover her strength. He gave her a reason to keep going, and later replaced that with a broken heart. In return, she'd stolen his ship, filled it with the fiercest females in the galaxy, and together the girls had made it their own. The Marauder was Andy's true home, a spear that was capable of tearing apart the skies. Now it was a junker. Her pilot, who had succumbed to the exhaustion of her emotions, was still unconscious. The medics had injected her with adrenaline when they disembarked from the ship, but Lyra had yet to wake. And Andy was pissed. She sat on the upper deck of an Adheran transport wagon, the strange, tumbling roll of the massive wheels below her churning her stomach into a state of unease. The animals stank like dung, to no one's surprise, what with the person-sized piles of it they left behind. And Andy's ship, her blessed, beautiful Marauder, was currently being dragged behind the wagon, balancing precariously on a wooden sled of sorts. One of the beasts dropped another pile of steaming, stinking dung. The Marauder's sled slipped right over it with a squelch that splattered green on a ruined viewport. Andy had to look away. "Is it dead forever?" Gilly asked, wide-eyed. She sat across from Andy on the wooden floorboards of the wagon, waving her hand as winged bugs the size of her fists fluttered around her, flashing different colors each time they dodged her swings.
"Not entirely," Breck said, staring past Gilly at the Marauder's sad, corpse-like form. "It just needs a little love."
Valin, still unconscious, was with Alfie, wrapped in a clean moss blanket on the lower deck of the wagon. Dex, blessedly, was up at the front, chatting happily to the sentinels as if he hadn't a care in the world. Andy had a feeling that if she heard him speak right now, she'd rip his throat out with her nails. She still hadn't sorted through her feelings since their fight in her quarters. But right now, allowing her anger to overwhelm her was easier. To even consider forgiveness, to consider anything when her ship was so destroyed, Andy couldn't fathom it.
"We can fix the ship," Lyra said in a weary voice.
Andy turned to her, surprised and glad to see that their pilot had finally awoken. "Are you all right?" Andy asked.
"I feel terrible, but I'll survive," Lyra replied,
sitting up and glancing back at the Marauder.
"The repairs will set us back a few days, but adherent ship workers are capable of getting us back in the air," she sighed. "And connections, of course. I'm in for a world of trouble."
"That you are, Lyra," Breck spoke up. "But don't worry. We'll be there to pick up the pieces."
Andy knew she should be more concerned about Lyra's issues. Her pilot's past with Adhira was muddled and painful, a constant struggle for Lyra to overcome. But Andy's mind was ragged, stripped free of the pieces that made her mortal. She felt as if the veil of the bloody Baroness was still stuck to her eyes.
"General Cortaz will fix the ship as he should have before," Andy said with a heated growl. The eyes of her crew went wide at the sudden rage in her voice. "If he doesn't, I'm going to tear the sagging skin from his face." This whole mission was the general's fault. If he hadn't allowed Zentaran spies to come in and steal his son, the old man would never have sent Dex after Andy and her crew. Then they wouldn't be in this mess in the first place, and the Marauder would still be up there in the sky doing what it did best. Smuggling. Thieving. Not rescuing a privileged, somehow still unconscious general's son with a mysterious, unknown pathogen in his blood, nor with Dex, sharing all his terrible truths about the past.
Andy couldn't help remembering that smile they'd shared just before the Marauder crashed. What did it mean, that she was still able to share such a happy moment with him?
"What is happening to my life?" she wondered. It was out of control. She was out of control. There were a million questions in Andy's mind, none of which could be answered.
"There's nothing we can do right now," Lyra said. She reached out, and Andy felt the warm flutter of Lyra's fingertips on her shoulder. She stiffened at the touch, and Lyra pulled away.
"A calm mind is a decent one."
"Not now, Lyra," Andy growled. "Save your adherent proverbs for another time."
Lyra sighed and turned to look at the others. "Your home may be the ship, Androma. It's all of ours, too. But Adhira is the planet that gave me life. I just lost control of myself before I could stop our ship from crashing into one of its most profitable crop fields. When Queen Alara finds out..." Andy didn't answer. Lyra's eyes narrowed.
"You are not the only one suffering today, Captain."
She scooted over to sit with Breck and Gilly. Andy slumped back into her seat, hating the action as soon as she'd done it. She was tired. She was also hungry, and, for some hellish reason, unbeknownst to her or her crew, or that ridiculous AI the General had sent with them on this death mission, she may have just lost her damned ship. She needed to be a leader. She needed to talk to her crew and devise a plan. She needed to apologize to Lyra. She needed to sort out how she felt about her conversation with Dex. But right now, she simply wanted to sit and not be bothered. So she did. With her mind reeling, her hands balled into fists at her side, Androma Rosella, the bloody Baroness of Mirabel, stared out the back of the wagon as her ship slid over another pile of fresh green dung, and allowed herself to pout like a child.
Chapter 45. Nor. Leaving her tower for the city was like entering a completely different world. The one she came from was that of privilege and wealth, while the one she walked into was born from death and chaos, left to rot under the clouded sun. Queen Nor Solis lifted the train of her burgundy gown as she, Darai, and Zahn mounted the steps to the waiting hover carriage that would carry them to the former palace grounds just outside the city. Today, her people would answer her call to action. Today was the day her plan would be set in motion, all the pieces finally sliding into place.
"Where to, Majesty?"
a servant asked from the driver's seat just beyond the curtained barrier. "The palace ruins," Nor said with a casual wave of her prosthetic hand. Her scars ached today, as they did every day. But something about returning to the place where it all happened made the throbbing worse. A constant tick in the back of her mind that whispered, "Death, death, death." "Make it slow. I want every eye to see us pass."
"Just be sure they don't get too close," Zahn added to the driver. "Hover just above their reach."
The moment Nor settled into the plush cushions, the hover started moving. Darai sat on the seat across from her and inclined his head toward her. His scars and the bits of metal holding his flesh in place practically squirmed as he smiled.
"You are a vision today, my queen. Your people will be blessed to look upon you."
She slid the curtains open, the better to see her city and its citizens below, the better to remind herself of what she was striving so hard to save. So close to her tower, the only residents around were the few remaining wealthy citizens of Nivea, the last habitable city on Zenterra. Old, crumbling buildings stood like skeletons, stretching their ragged arms into the sky. The hover carriage glided through a plume of smoke, bathing the windows in sooty gray.
"I trust you are prepared," Darai asked.
"I haven't heard your speech yet. Are you sure you've..."
"Be silent, uncle."
Nor did not bother to even glance his way as she continued her admonishment. "If you really trust me, as you say you do, you would not have to ask." His silence was a welcome gift as the smoke cleared and the carriage continued on, its engine wheezing in the background. "Nor," Zahn whispered, leaning close enough that his breath tickled her ear. "You're too tense. The people will see it, and it may cause them to doubt." His hand grazed her thigh.
"I know it was a late night. Perhaps we should try this tomorrow."
Warmth shot through her at his touch, quickly followed by a spike of frustration from his words.
"They will see what I wish them to see," she said.
She gently moved his hand away.
"In this time of darkness, they will find a queen able to guide them into the light."
Darai chuckled silently across from them.
"Someday, boy, you will learn that she does what she pleases, when she pleases, and she does it with flair."
His smile stretched as he added, "A gift inherited from her late mother, no doubt."
"I thought I asked for silence," Nor snapped at him, her frustration barreling toward fury. "Your bravery lately is verging on foolery, uncle. I'm growing tired of it."
Darai's eyes flitted to hers.
"A wise queen does not speak down to others."
Nor sighed. "But a niece, desperate for silence from her talkative uncle, does." Darai shook his head, a smirk on his face, but he remained mercifully silent. Zahn's hand found Nor's thigh again. This time she allowed it to stay. Outside the carriage below, the streets transformed from sturdy, fortified houses made to withstand the unstable planet's constant trembling to rickety pieces of rubble thrown together by shaky hands. For most people, having a roof over their heads to protect them from the poisonous fumes and acidic rain was a luxury. Others were not so blessed. As they passed, beggars reached their dirty hands up in hopes of touching their queen, starvation and illness etched on their faces. Nor glanced down at them, the fissure in her heart widening. The unified systems had done this. She would make sure that they pay for such a heinous crime.
Start distributing the rations and medkits, Zahn said to the driver and the guard seated beside him. Make sure the citizens follow us to the grounds. The guard nodded, then motioned for his soldiers to drop the silver boxes down to the citizens as he exited the carriage. One by one the boxes fell, like angels descending to the needy. The citizens crowded around them like bugs, ripping and tearing at the contents inside. Greet them, Darai, Nor commanded. Her advisor opened the window and leaned his balding head out. Come, Zen Terrans. Gasps rose from the now massive crowd of onlookers. Darai's voice was soft, but it carried like a wave. Faces covered in filth and grime angled toward the carriage in the sky. Your queen will feed you. She will heal your afflictions, if you will only come and listen to her words. Below, the citizens trailed after them in hordes. Darai leaned back into the hover and smiled at Nor, the bones in his cheeks standing out. The scars on his face had never faded, though his, unlike hers, had not come from the war. And yet he wore them with a survivor's pride. Why feed them, my dear, when you know how low our resources are running? We have soldiers to feed, scientists, too. I do not wish to hear any more of your opinions on this matter, Nor said. They'd been arguing about it for weeks. This is your last warning, Uncle. Darai crossed his arms over his chest. Some day I will grow old and I will be gone. Then you'll miss my commentary and my advice. Nor huffed out a breath. Many times Zahn had asked Nor about her short temper when it came to the old man. He'd raised her, protected her, and yet she was often so cold with Darai that he could have been an unwelcome stranger. But Nor knew Darai didn't truly mind it. He respected her coldness, her short temper, the way she spoke to him, because it made her stronger. Darai believed that love was a weakness. He never wished for her to show him her softer side. The few times she had, growing up, he'd punished her for it, and so she gave him exactly what he desired, the cold queen, rather than the tormented, injured child she'd once been. After several long minutes, Nor asked, Do you remember that insipid little creature my father gave me as a gift on my 7th birthday? Darai nodded with a small smile. The feathered Indriga. It followed you around the palace as if it were starved for attention, your constant shadow. It was loyal to me from the start, Nor said. And do you know why, Darai? His silence was answer enough. I fed it, she explained. Give a pet food, Darai, and it will do anything to stay by your side. Starve it or beat it, and it will begin to fear your very existence, only coming out of hiding in the moments when you have something to give and it to take. I'm afraid I don't understand. Nor closed her eyes and pinched the space between her brows, a headache brewing from the exposure to the polluted air outside her tower. Her uncle was growing dim in his old age. Lately she had begun to outgrow him, seeking his guidance less and less. The people of Zen Terra are my responsibility now. But more than that, they are my soldiers, and I wish for them to follow me always, no matter how dark the path I choose to walk upon. Wise words, my queen, Darai said with a bow of his head. A ruler is only as strong as her army. Your father used to say the very same thing. His army was weak, Zahn said, rejoining the conversation. He looked at Nor as if she were a goddess. Hers will be the strongest this planet has ever seen. She took his words to heart and reminded herself to reward him later in her private quarters. Together they looked down upon the crowd of people still following below. Nor slid the curtain closed as the hover moved on. She knew her people were struggling to survive, but she couldn't allow herself to think about their pain when there were bigger plans in the making. Her people were resilient, capable of surviving the very worst betrayals from the other cursed systems in Mirabel. She had to fortify herself against the past in order to bring about the future. Today was the mark of a new start. Today she would call her Zen-Terrans to arms. When her plan came to fruition, they would cheer her name in these desolate streets, knowing they would soon be free. Nora's carriage slid to a stop at the base of a mountain of rubble. Years ago, a glistening, pristine, black-and-red-spired palace stood in its place. As she took in the sight of the destruction, memories flooded her senses. Rubble crushing her arm, blood dripping into the dust. Nora's father beside her, his screams dying out as the weight of the palace stole his last breaths. Somewhere in the sky, an explosion rocked the world. A voice from the past called out to her, keeping her conscious. Nora, my sweet Nora, you were meant for so much more than this. Are you ready, Nora? Darai asked now, his voice pulling her back into the present as he motioned her toward the door. Outside the curtain, she could see her people, thousands of them crowding in to stand amid the wide expanse of debris. This very place used to be the palace courtyard, so vibrant with life that on the sunnier days her eyes had ached to look upon it. She remembered running through the gardens here, laughing as her father chased her, the ever-blooming Natilla flowers changing colors with each season. They were the only flower that never died with the cold. In winter, when all else faded, they grew the brightest, a purple so deep it rivaled a nebula. Such colors no longer existed on Zen-Terra. Nor's personal guard, dressed in bold red uniforms, were scattered amid the crowd, the only bright shade aside from her gown. It reminded her of the blood that once pooled in these crumbling streets, the fires that burned after the bombs were dropped on thousands of innocents. Majesty. Darai stood before her, holding out his veined hand. It is time. She pulled the skirts of her gown away from her ankles and stepped out of the carriage under her own strength onto the slab of rock that would act as a stage while she addressed her people. A silver microphone stood ready to amplify her words. Nor stopped before it, her breath carried out across the crowd. Thousands of bodies were packed in around the ruins of the palace. Voices hummed throughout the crowd, pleading with her to feed them, clothe them. Mothers lifted their infants overhead, begging their queen for salvation. There was a reason Nor rarely left her tower. Standing here, so close to the chaos and destruction, her silk shoes standing atop the bones of her past. A weaker woman would have bent and broken. Zen-Terra was her home, and the citizens were living, breathing pieces of the whole, and each of them was falling apart little by little. Soon there would be no life left in this desolate palace. The screams got louder as she stood there, looking out at the throngs of people below. This was the future of Zen-Terra. This was her army. Weak. Ruined. She needed to give them strength, and strength was nothing without hope. She took another deep breath. In. Out. Steady and true. Sway them. Make them join you. She smiled. This was what she was made for. Nor raised her arms, her golden fist gleaming in the dying light. As if on command, the crowd hushed. My fellow Zen-Terrans, Nor said in a voice that radiated power. Our planet is dying. This we have known for the past century. For far too long, we have sat in silence, waiting for our planet's end. When we tried to take action, our galaxy betrayed us, and so began the war. The crowd shouted in agreement as she continued. My mother was taken captive during the cataclysm. For years, she was a prisoner of Arcardius. Alone, my father tried to help our planet, but instead he was crushed beneath the weight of the unified systems, like so many others in the final battle. Nor paused, taking a breath. I come to you today, standing upon his grave, standing in the exact spot where my own body was marred. Silence, marked by a few scattered coughs, a wailing child. They were without hope. They had no desire to fight, could not be lifted up by their queen's words. For a moment, fear gripped Noor like an icy fist. She would fail. She would not become the leader she had always hoped to be. She would end up just like her father, a ruler who died with no honor, no victory, only shame. She looked to the edge of the crowd, searching for a way out, but Zahn caught her eye and nodded encouragingly. Beside him, Darai stood watching. She remembered his words to her after her father's funeral, as the two of them stood atop her tower, acid rain trickling from the sky. You will become what he could never be, Noor. I will stay by your side until I see that become truth. She breathed deeply, her lungs aching from the tainted air as she looked down at her golden prosthetic. It was a shield, one she could no longer hide behind. Not if she wished to be seen, truly seen by her people. One by one, Noor undid the latches that held the prosthetic in place, each pop like a gunshot into the microphone. One shot, two shots, three. The golden hand fell away, and the outside air washed across her skin, causing her to flinch. Where her true hand used to be, only an angry stump covered in swollen red welts and scars remained. She lifted her arm high, ignoring the impulse to bury it within the folds of her gown. I stand before you, Zen Terrans, not as your queen, but as your equal. The lie slipped like a delicious poison from her lips. If this was what they needed to hear, she would speak it. I was broken here as a child, born in the trenches of the war that left us all shattered. For years, I have battled with the wounds of my past, just as you have. Thousands of eyes stared back, scars and burns and limbs healed wrong, some limbs missing altogether. But they were listening. She could see it in the widening of their eyes, feel it in the palpable anger and pain that seemed to sweep across the crowd among the whispers. Her ruined arm still in the air, Noor continued. I stand before you, marked by the destructive ways of our enemies, and tell you, no longer will I bow to pain and fear. No longer will I allow myself to cower when I hear my enemy's name. You deserve a leader who will rise above. You deserve a queen of blood and rage. Shouts of agreement began to spread through the crowd. The unified systems think themselves strong and us weak. For many years we have allowed this to be true. But now is the time to strike, to send a message that we still remain, that we are stronger than they believe. Rage flowed through her, hot and furious. I ask you now, Zen Terrans, will you join me? She lifted her arm higher and allowed her voice to soar, rising above the cries of her citizens. The unified systems think we are defeated, but we have only just entered the fight. I am calling upon you now to rise up with me against an evil that has been waiting too long for our vengeance. They deserve to share our pain. They deserve to share our desolation, to see their streets flow like a river with their betraying blood. The crowd roared, continuing to grow in size as others joined Noor's audience. This is the turning point in a war that never ended. For 15 years we have sat in silence, but soon the galaxy will hear our cry. The citizens began to shout for revenge, for salvation, for blood. She turned to Darai, lifting her chin in a proud nod as the people roared. He shuffled over, a small silver box cradled in his palms. He bowed before kneeling, the box held before Noor. The lid flipped open with an audible pop. Inside, nestled on a plush cushion, was a small vial of softly glowing silver liquid. Nor took it in her remaining hand, lifting it up for the crowd to see. She waited until their voices fell to a hush. "The fruits of our labor have been harvested," Nor said. "The contents of this vial will bring the unified system to its knees. This is the final piece in a plan that has been in the works for years, and finally, it is time to unleash its power upon our foes. Zen-Terra is the shoreline of a new ocean ripe for the taking. This galaxy, every planet in every system outside of Olin, is about to be swept up by our revenge." Nor paused, looking out at the thousands gathered before her. They looked at her with wide eyes full of hope, something that had once been lost beneath the weight of years of struggling. With pride in her heart, Nor belted one last line. "Remember, Zen Terrans, and never forget that even the stars can bleed." The roar of the crowd was deafening as she placed the vial back into its box, lifted her train, and strode back to the carriage. Their cries followed her as she gracefully climbed inside. They remained as Zahn and Darai joined her, and the carriage took to the skies. "A true show, my dear," Darai said as they left the rubble of the palace behind. Tears glistened in his black eyes. "What next?" "We will proceed with Zenith," Nor replied. She glanced out the curtained window, smiling as her people pushed and shoved in the streets below, desperate to be close to her as she soared toward her tower. "And have a crown forged for me," she added. "A crown?" Darai asked. "Every queen needs one," Nor said, sliding her hand along Zahn's thigh as she watched her people celebrate in the streets. "I want to wear it while we feast on the galaxy's bones."
Chapter 46 Lyra. Lyra had always been one with the skies. Adhira, a planet terraformed into extremes, had taught her to love living a life without having her feet on the ground. The ground was a confusing place, with limits and laws. The skies offered nothing but endless freedom. They had everything to give, and demanded nothing in return. And yet, being back on Adhira... home, Lyra thought as she stood in the rock temple atop the mountain fortress of Rymor, the centermost point of the terraformed world. It had taken the transport wagon 2 hours to drag the ruined marauder here from the crash site, another hour of explaining to Queen Alara's sentinels what had happened, and another after that to finally find a moment to escape from the girls once they'd settled into a guest wing deep inside the mountain. Their questions and the concerned looks they cast Alira's way were too much for her already fragile emotional state to handle. She needed a moment to settle herself again, to rediscover her peace. She'd slipped away from her crew while they ate lunch, walking past Dextro and Alfie as they patched in a call to General Kortas. She'd been surprised when Dex had looked up and asked her how she was feeling. She wouldn't have believed him capable of such courtesy. She'd given him a small, stunned smile in return before slipping away. Finally, after remembering her way through the winding tunnels of the mountain and climbing a set of stairs so tall Lyra thought her legs might combust from the strain of her burning muscles, she'd made it to her destination. Now here she stood, at the very top of Rymor, catching her breath, drinking sweet water from a polished red rock basin in the center of the towering temple, and admiring the early afternoon view that she'd missed the most since leaving this planet 4 years ago. Though the temple was small, with only room enough for a few bodies at a time, Lyra found it the most spacious place in the world. Nothing but the 4 rock columns and the waist-high ledge stood between her and the sky, and Lyra's view was endless. From here, she could see all of Adhira, as far as her eyes could carry her. It was here, atop the mountain itself, that Lyra had come countless times as a child. She'd come when her father passed on to the next life. She'd come when she had her efflorescence ceremony, and when she simply wanted to escape from the weight of the world on her shoulders. Here, the mountain had always offered to bear her burden instead. It was here, year after year, that a much younger Lyra used to sit with a heavy woolen shawl around her shoulders, the cold wind combing across her face, and allow herself to dream. A single, massive eyeglass stood empty and waiting in the center of the mountaintop temple. It was made from the very same beryllium as the Marauder, acquired long ago in a trade with Zenterra. Though the beryllium was unbreakable, Lyra still took care as she pressed her eye to the cold eyepiece. A little adjusting, a few swivels and flashes of light, and Lyra felt a smile spread across her face. Her chest lightened, her heart raced. Although she'd seen this view 100 times, it still took her breath away. Through the eyeglass, all of Adhira unfurled before her like a perfect, tiny map. Heavens above, she'd missed this planet. To the north, she could see the emerald expanse that made up Aramea, the terraformed rainforest full of monstrous trees, which spread all the way into the clouds and beyond. Inside those trees, entire cities buzzed with life. At Aramea's edge, tucked into the trees, set the falls of Amorga. They boomed so loudly that it was impossible to hear anything else once you got within a half a mile of their location. She'd been to those falls. She'd swum in their depths and explored the sunken city beyond. The wind blew, tickling Lyra's senses. She swiveled the eyeglass to the west, where endless green faded into deep reds and browns. The sands of Bylay were pocked with Gia mounds, desert rocks that stood miles tall. The city of Lavada thrived inside the monstrous pillars, where the city folk milled about in a series of twisting tunnels. They weren't the only inhabitants within those pillars. They shared it with Vergs, gentle sand-colored creatures whose many eyes helped them see in the depths of the Gia mounds. They had almost as many legs as eyes, which helped them crawl through the deepest tunnels below ground, not yet inhabited by other Lavidian residents. Lyra shivered. She'd never been a fan of giant wriggling bugs. She shifted the eyeglass again, fighting against a fresh gust of wind. She adjusted the view until a vision of deep, beautiful blue appeared. The endless sea, a world of water that was as deep as it was wide, its people gifted with gills, webbed fingers and toes, able to live beneath the crashing waves. And here Lyra stood, far away in the sky, in the center of it all. She loved this place. It was here, standing alone on this very balcony, that Lyra first met the greatest loves of her life. The sky, the stars, and the ships that soared through them, admiring the view. Lyra looked up so fast she nearly fell over. That voice, how much she'd missed it. "You sneaky bastard!" Lyra hissed. Then she sidestepped the eyeglass and crossed to the other side of the temple in 3 quick strides, where she threw herself into her twin brother's arms. Lon was older than her by just a few minutes, but he'd never let her forget it. He was the loud brute strength to Lyra's calm, calculated silence, the one who'd always laughed at her for having her nose buried in the pages of books, and yet he'd frequently spent his wages on the very best ones he could find to give her. "I have to admit, little sister," Lon said, holding her out at arm's length. "You've outdone yourself with your entrance this time, destroying an entire field of Revan crops and your ship in the process." He grinned, his purple eyes flashing. "You've certainly changed." He always knew how to press her buttons, but Lyra still smiled as she looked at her brother. God stars, how he'd grown. He was at least a head taller than her now, his pale blue arms rippling with muscle, spreading up into a thick neck and strong shoulders. He wore the traditional loose, sleeveless green shirt of the Sentinels. A shiny golden adherent emblem was pinned on the fabric, right above his heart. "You've been promoted!" Lyra gasped. Queen Alara isn't easy to work for, as you can well imagine. Lon grinned like a forest cat, earning another smile from Lyra. He wrapped his knuckles on the adherent emblem, the endless spiral that signified life. A lot has happened since you've been away, little bug. She wrinkled her nose. I thought I'd grown out of that horrendous nickname. He laughed, a booming thing that rivaled the mountain wind. You can leave your planet behind, Lyra, but it doesn't change who you are inside. Silence swept over them, sudden and piercing. A single scaled patch on Lon's right cheek warmed, glowing the slightest blue. He closed his eyes and clenched his jaw, willing the emotions away. He had always been better at controlling them than she was. Lon, Lyra whispered, I've missed you. I think of you every day. I've wanted to visit, truly. It's just that I became a criminal, she thought, that I was afraid of what you would think of me, of the person I have become. You stopped sending me updates, he said. You disappeared, Lyra. All I had to keep up to date with you were the... He swallowed hard, the scale flashing again on his cheek. The updates about a certain crew of wanted girls, halfway across Mirabel. The crimes I won't even begin to discuss. She closed her eyes, looked away from the pained expression on his face, so much like her own. Things changed out there. Situations got out of control. I reacted. There have been deaths, Lon hissed. His voice was so low it was nearly lost in the wind. Not at my hand, Lyra promised. I swear it, Lon. I swear it in this holy place. His jaw flexed as he gritted his teeth. I know you aren't a killer, Lyra. Her heart relaxed, just slightly. But you left. You left me. And you chose to forget about home. No, Lyra held up her hands. I chose to protect you from who I have become, Lon. Silence fell between them. Somewhere down below, a bell clanged. The sound, deep and full, swept up the mountainside, trickled past Lyra's ears. It meant that Queen Alara was accepting petitions from the adherent people, young and old, rich and poor. Alara was a wise leader, loving and attentive. She cared wholeheartedly for Adhira, giving her all to the care of her people. It was something Lyra could never do, could never even dream of doing. So she'd fled. She'd made herself into someone unworthy. She'd created demons to chase her, the kind she could never outrun. We don't have much time alone together, so I'll make this brief, Lon said, drawing her attention back to him. Whatever you think you've become, he sighed, turning to face her, you are still my sister. And I will always have room in my heart for you. The old you. The new you. The you that you have yet to become. He pressed two fingers to her forehead. I don't have to agree with it all, Lyra. But my loyalty is yours. Until the mountain falls. Until the mountain falls. They were the last words he'd said to her before she ran away on a starship and took to life in the skies. Her heart clenched again. It's not all bad, what the girls and I do, Lyra said, trying to lighten the tone in her voice. She moved back toward the eyeglass and ran her fingertips across it. You can't even begin to imagine what's happened in the past few days. I can guess it's quite a tale, Lon said, seeing as you and your friends aren't rotting in a cell in the belly of Rymor right now for that crash landing, and just before Revalia, too. Lyra winced. She'd forgotten all about the Peace Festival. It was a yearly occurrence on Adhira, a celebration of the end of the war against Zentera. Let me tell you my side of the story, then, Lyra said. Let me explain to you what's gone on, so you can try to see it in a different light. Lon shook his head. Lyra, I can't. Just the good things? Lyra asked, her voice settling into the pleading tone she'd used on him when they were younger, when she desperately wanted the last bite of his moss meringue, or to play with one of his toys. I'm a starship pilot, Lon. Just like I always dreamed I'd be. She placed her hand on his warm arm. I've even taken up that nasty little habit you try to hide from the Queen. His eyes flashed. You have your secrets, too, she teased. Moonshoe, little bug. He clicked his tongue and shook his head, but then he smiled, the warmth slowly spreading back into his features as he took the bait.